Should we ever meet again? Should your face light up my eyes? We'll talk endlessly of days we knew and drink to those we missed. All those days I spent with you.
When he found out that she was actually in a care home, a mental home, mm-hmm. did he have feelings of guilt or of being deceived by his father? What were his feelings on meeting his mother again?
This is something that I've pondered on for such a long time. And again, it goes back to the dream that I had, thinking how I felt. And mine was only a dream. And I'd wake up in tears thinking, oh, and I suddenly realised, no, this is reality. To him, to suddenly find out that his mother's back in his life, you can only look back and think of all those years you missed. And then you can only think, well, why wasn't I told? Why was this? And one of the really sad things also about it is that I went with my wife down to Bristol to do some research, and we went to his house and went to the Bristol Hippodrome. And the institution, Fishponds Mental Institution, where she was, is literally a 20-minute walk from his house. So all that time, all through those years, he could have just walked there without any problem at all. And probably not to know she was there. I mean, that must have hit him very hard later on when they were reconnected and that he found out, he was to find out how close she was.
Why did his father keep that from him? Was it shame?
Well, again, you have to go back to the time they lived in. The early Victorian times, mental health was not understood anywhere near like it is today. And in a way, yes, perhaps it was something of shame. And also, that time, again, the power that men used to have over women. I mean, Elias had to pay £1 a year for Elsie's to be in the institution. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is another sad thing on the case. There are stories from cousins that did go to see her, and they said how perfectly normal she seemed. And then when you tie this in with another fact that Elias took up with another woman, let's say 15 years after Elsie was incarcerated, then again it starts to add to the total mystery and the total, whichever way you look at it, it's a sad story from all angles. The wife that's lost all that time, and I wonder how much was she really, was it purely postnatal depression which never was really sorted out? Was it something that was in her makeup anyway? But she didn't get any real help. And then you have to look at it from Elias' side, that the woman he loved has gone from this person, normal person, to someone who became obsessive compulsive. She washed her hands and all that sort of thing. And then she was taken into the institution. And then you think, well, from his point of view, he's still a relatively young man, has a life. It's very complicated. The more you look into it, the more you think about it, the more complicated it becomes. And then the bottom of all this, if you like, is this young boy who's trying to find his way in life, and all he knows is the disappearance. And then later on, some 20 years later, when he's in his late 20s, he rediscovers that she's alive. So all these things must have come back into his psyche at the time. And there's various reports of when he actually did discover she was alive. The common one is that he was doing the film Gunga Din, and halfway through filming, he got a telegram that his father just died. This was 1935, and that his mother was still alive. And what a shock this all was. But I think he actually knew about 2 or 3 years earlier. In 1933, late 1932, he came back to the UK to tell his father he was about to get married to Virginia Cheryl. And it was sort of blurted out that Elsie was still alive and was in the mental institution. So that's when, I personally believe that he found out. But then, of course, you've got this other quandary of him. His father's still alive with another woman. What does he do? Does he go rush and see her? And then does he want to rush and see her? And he, you know, again, as I said, whichever way you look at it, it's a very difficult thing to deal with.
Complex, yeah. He accepted the situation as a child that his mother had gone away because, as you talked about earlier on, especially in that era, a child just accepted what the father said. But what were his feelings towards his father? early on and then maybe, you know, over the years.
If you pick up any book and read any time he talks about his father, he always talks of him with a great deal of pride, I think, and love, and says what a wonderful man he was. What he really felt, I really don't know. We can only imagine. You know, he had a very difficult situation to deal with, and anyone would find it soul-destroying. And, you know, I mean, there are rumours that in late 1933 he tried to commit suicide. In one book there is a report which we found in some of the local press cuttings that he'd been admitted to hospital, and the reason then stated was that he had suffered a concussion during filming. But there's one or two books that point to that there's various rumours that there was a suicide attempt at the end when he did discover about his mother. But again, and on all of this came at a time when he was about to get married. He just didn't really have a leg to stand on, the poor man.
Maybe it's me who started this, the fool who believed that he'd be missed. What did I do wrong? Where do I belong? Seems they did.
He started off humble beginnings in Bristol. And what took him to Hollywood? How did he make that leap?
Leap's a very good word, and that's a word that he used a lot. In fact, one of his favourite sayings was that the hardest leap he ever made was that from acrobat to actor. It starts, we go back to where Elsie has disappeared, is out of his life. His father is very rarely at home. He's at school and he doesn't really enjoy school that much. Does his best to get expelled. Today we call them latchkey kids. He come home from school, there'd be nobody there. His grandmother was supposed to look after him, or I think there was an aunt that was supposed to look after him, but often she just didn't bother in the end, and they didn't bother seeing each other, and his father would return home very late. So it was quite a lonely existence, you would imagine. And he'd spend a lot of time wandering around the Bristol docks. I know he was in the Boy Scouts, which he probably found a lot of friendships there. But he was at school, and a chemistry teacher at school worked at the Bristol Hippodrome. And one afternoon, this guy was installing a lighting system, and Archie went along with him. And literally the moment he stepped inside that theatre, he was surrounded with happy, smiling show people, if you like. And very quickly, that became his home. He was there as often as he possibly could get there. And he'd see acts from all over Britain. And he got to become an errand boy at the theatre and so on. And then one day there was an act called Bob Pender and his Knockabout Comedians. And they were a comic acrobatic group, if you like, led by a guy named Bob Pender. And the moment he saw them, I would imagine he thought, yeah, I'd like to be one of them. They're cool. That's what I'd like to do. So the Penders were there for about a week or so, and then they moved on. And he basically ran away from home to join them. Kid that runs away from home to join the circus.
I suppose it was a family for him as well, wasn't it?
Yep, Bob Pender, well, I'll come back to him in a minute or so, but I think he was very lucky that he landed up with Bob Pender. He ran away to join them. He lied to Bob Pender that he was, I think the age was supposed to be 16, which he wasn't anywhere near. I think he was 14 at the time. And Bob Pender said, fine. And surprisingly, Elias, his father, tracked him down and took him back to Bristol. Back at school, Archie had been given a taste of the outside world, and he liked it, and he thought, no, I'm going to run away again. And his father this time didn't really pursue him. And Bob Pender... And I think also there was the fact that the two men had met. So I think Elias probably felt that he's probably as well off there as anywhere else he's going to be, maybe, to give Elias some grace. And that was the very start of his career. And the reason I say he was lucky is that Bob Pender had been a very famous Drury Lane clown, and he toured all over Britain, and they had pantomime runs at Drury Lane for something like 13 years in a row. And this group were just literally sold out wherever they went. They were very popular, one of the very popular acts of the time. So Bob Pender was an acrobat and a comedian, and his wife, Margaret, had, as we spoke before, had been at the Folies Bergère. There are a lot of other kids in the troupe his age. Pender's perhaps were a mother and father to him. And he began to learn skills that would last him his whole life. And I think this is perhaps one of the happiest times of his life. Because for the next two or three years, they travelled Britain, toured and the near continent, and he learnt discipline. They would all take it in turns to iron their uniforms, wash their uniforms. They'd do a performance, travel on. And it was a life for him, you know, it was interesting. And then his big break came a bit by accident. And I only found out the story a couple of years ago, that Bob Pender was due to go off to the United States to do a tour. He'd been booked on a 2-year tour over there, I think it was. And he was taking 8 people with him. And initially, Archie wasn't one of the 8. And the 8th person was meant to be a gentleman by the name of Roland Dixie. And I think it's thanks to Roland Dixie's wife that Cary Grant had a career, because she said to him, well, look, you know, I don't want you going off to the States. It's me or it's the Pender Troupe. He chose his wife.
Hmm.
And Archie was the next one in line. And he was on the boat leaving Southampton on the Olympic and headed off to the United States, where they were performing in front of 3,000-4,000 people in huge theatres, and travelled there around there for 2 years, and again very successfully. And also at that time, one of his habits which stayed with him his whole life was that he used to watch all the other acts, either from the side of the stage or right back at the and he used to study them and literally copy them. So he learnt a lot about timing and performing from watching these acts. And then 2 years later, I think Bob Pender now was ready to return home. And Archie sort of said, well, no, I want to stay here. And that, for him, he felt there was nothing back in England. He really didn't want to return. He had been in contact with his father. He had been writing to him reasonably regularly. But I, interestingly, thinking about it now, I would imagine no other communication of the month of Elsie was ever mentioned. And by hook or crook, he stayed in America. And initially, it was very tough for him. He found various jobs. He sold ties. It was a mind-reading act. He did stilt walking. You also have to remember that the acrobatic troupe were very good, so he was a very proficient acrobat and very good at his craft. But the trouble was that vaudeville, as it was then, the early 20s, was starting to die. And one thing that Cary Grant was good at was realising that the world is changing. And he decided that he would try to make it as an actor. And it took him some time, but eventually he began to get small roles, which led on to bigger roles, and he ended up on Broadway. And it was while on Broadway he happened to be in a play called Nicky with Faye Ray, who was in King Kong.
Yeah.
She was just off to film the King Kong film in California. And she said to him, you know, why don't you come out to California and give it a go? Which initially he resisted. And eventually he decided to go on a 2-week golfing holiday with a friend of his, and he never returned. As soon as he saw California and the palm trees and the warm climate coming from cold England, he decided that's where he was going to stay.